Good evening. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and you're listening to Mondo Eros live on bbsradio.com. And we are back tonight live with original programming, and I have a very special guest, someone who I've been wanting to talk to for a while, because I've been reading her articles and her postings. And I recently became a friend of her on Facebook and suggested, how about doing this show? So I'd like to welcome to the broadcast tonight, Liz Langley.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you being here because, you know, I have been reading you for quite some time, your articles in Alternet. And then I saw you on Facebook, and I mean, that's her. She wrote, that's her who wrote that. Oh, I got to come friends with her, and I got to get her on the show here.
Well, I love being able, I love Facebook because it puts you in touch with so many people in so many different industries, and it's just been, I tend to post more there than on Twitter. I know everybody Twitters.
Yes.
I like Facebook because you get to see a little bit more about people, I think.
Yes.
Is it a generational thing? I can't meet people in 140 characters, you know? I want more than that.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a simple solution to that. All you have to do is, when you're in Facebook, add the Twitter application.
Uh-huh.
And link the two accounts together. And then what you do is when you put... You put the posting on Twitter, and then it goes automatically on Facebook.
Okay, so I don't have to bounce back and forth. I always forget about Twitter. And I have a friend who thinks that Twitter is a great thing because it will teach people to write well concisely. You know, like, and I don't know whether that's true or not, but you know, it's great because you get all of this stuff out there and see so many people that you get to meet so many people like I met you. And we have a mutual friend in Sherry Winston.
Yes.
Who is wonderful. I wrote a story based on her her workshops, her Center for the Intimate Arts workshops. And she was fantastic. She was here in Orlando and did some workshops here, and I learned so much from her. So.
Oh, so, yeah, she's amazing. We've had her several times at Sexy Spirits, and she mm-hmm. always does an amazing job for us and always brings out a good crowd of people.
Great, yeah. She's very. I liked her the breathing techniques that she was teaching. Really,
yeah.
You know, just to open up and make your senses come more alive and become more orgasmic that way. I learned a lot from her. So, just wanted to say hi to Sherry.
Absolutely. So, do you did she present at Fairway?
I'm sorry?
Did she present at Fairway?
Oh, you mean at Fairvilla?
Yeah, Fairvilla. I'm sorry, Fairvilla.
Oh, no. You know, it was just before I started. I do, my blog is LizLangley.com. You can see it at LizLangley.com. And it's sponsored by Fairvilla Megastore, which is, actually, Fairvilla Megastore is an adult toy novelty video store here in Orlando, and they just won the AVN award for best boutique.
Wow.
So we're super proud of that. It's a great store. And I didn't get, she was, Sherry taught at Florida School of Holistic Living while she was here.
Okay.
I tried to get her over to Fairvilla because I just wanted her to see it, but she didn't have too much time while she was here, but I know she would love it. But
what exactly do you do there?
I just blog. I write my blog.
Okay.
And I write about some of their products, and sometimes I write about, you know, different events and things like that they have going on in the store. But I have the ability to do just a lot of things that I want to write about on the blog. So I have a lot of free rein to do whatever I please, really. And but they're great to work with, and so when they have events like Stormy Daniels was here,
yes.
The other night, the adult film star who is running or considering a run for Louisiana State Senate, So they had her, and they've also started Fairville University, where they have people come and do product demos and show you how to actually use some of the products that they sell, because then you can, if some of these things, people are shy to ask, which is kind of too bad, because I think this is true of most really good adult stores, that these people who are the sales associates have an encyclopedic knowledge of how to use these things. And they get these questions all the time. It's their business. It's like, it would be like being, you know, embarrassed to ask a video clerk about, you know, recommending a movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's so, but I think people get shy, and hopefully they'll, you know, open up and ask, because they're there to help, and they, if they ask you questions, you know, very, in a very forthright, grown-up way, hopefully then you feel relaxed about answering them, and then you get the things you actually want and will need and will make you happy. Because that's the goal, right?
That's something I always found about people who work in adult stores like that. They tend to be people who are very knowledgeable. I mean, up here in New York at Babeland, for example, mm-hmm. I mean, for several years you had Jamie Waxman working there. I mean, what better? How much better could you get than that?
Yeah, I met her at, I was up there, I did a reading for Best Sex Writing 2008, because I was lucky I got to be in that, and I met her and Rachel Kramer-Bussell and Laura Altram and a lot of really wonderful women who do a lot of really great writing, and I went to Babeland a couple of times, and actually when I lived in New York, I thought, oh, I'd love to work here, and then I think you had to be much more experienced than like, you have to be a lot smarter than me to work in Babeland. And I was very impressed. I mean, it's a beautiful store. And, you know, and it's another one of those stores that makes you feel relaxed to ask, you know, and the staff is approachable. And it's so wonderful because, you know, I think it can enhance people's lives so much to get the products that they really need. And if you have a bad experience, if you don't ask questions and you kind of just guess, and you have a bad experience, that can really put you off, and that's too bad, because there's so much to be had out of some of these things. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I hope that you can make a return visit and do another reading.
Well, it's been a long time, and I do. I miss New York, especially, and I think New York in October is one of the most beautiful places in the world. I miss it a lot, and so hopefully I will get to come back another time soon.
Oh, great!
So are there nudist organizations?
There is. Yeah, I would imagine there is. Well, yes, there is at the Pleasure Salon. They arrange for a nude beach. They go to have several nude beaches that they arrange a day at.
So, really?
They do. They do exist, and they have. You know, they make a date, and then they, you know, they make an arrangement for everyone to come aboard and go there.
So it's like almost like they have the beach to themselves for the day or something like that. Like they make an arrangement to.
Well, they make an arrangement for everybody to get there.
I see.
They make an announcement. Hey, we're going to be at this place on this date, and this is how you get there. And you know, if you need carpooling, we'll set it up and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really great Pleasure Salon. Is run by Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson, who are two wonderful tantric teachers, friends of mine, and really great. And they actually have the Pleasure Salon is actually in the same place where Rachel does her book reading series, the Happy Ending Lounge.
Okay.
Yeah, which is appropriately named.
Yeah. And I look at her blog all the time, and I would love to be able to get up there and actually go to some of these events. But again, you know, at least it's great to be able to be in touch online. And now that I'm thinking about New York in October, and I don't know. I think it might be a little cold on the beach nude in October, but.
Probably in October, yes.
Especially being a Florida girl and being kind of used to, you know, it's. I think it felt like it was
right, but you were born in Brooklyn, right? So.
I was born in Brooklyn, and I lived, but we moved down here when I was a little kid, and and then I lived here for a long time, but I lived also in Boston, and I moved back to New York for a little while in 2003, and that was, you know, when I went to Babeland and all of that, and I loved it. I loved it. I missed it, but I was kind of broke and kind of cold, and I decided that I missed the beaches and, you know, and all of that stuff. It's a much slower paced life.
Yeah, well, hey, it works for you. I mean, you have a really great thing going on down there, especially with Fairway and Fairvilla. Why do I keep wanting to say that for Fairvilla? Fairvilla. Okay.
I don't know. Fairway is like, it's a supermarket, isn't it?
Or right, Fairvilla.
Fairvilla.
I love your videos. I love the videos you shoot there. They're just so funny.
Oh, thank you. Did you get a chance to check out the Fukuoka glove video?
Yes, but and I also love the fact that you got to interview Ken Russell.
Oh man, that was a great day. I was so excited. Ken Russell was here for the Florida Film Festival, and my friend Barry Sandler wrote this screenplay for Crimes of Passion, which
yes.
Ken Russell directed, and so Barry got Ken to come here and his wonderful wife Lisi, and I really didn't think that I would get him to come to the store. And I got to meet him after the screening of Crimes of Passion. I was wearing my Fairvilla University t-shirt, which just says FU real big on it. And so somebody said something about my t-shirt, and we were talking about the phallic imagery in Ken Russell's movies, right? He has,
yes.
like, every... he's got the greatest kind of comic psychosexual sensibility in the world, and Crimes of Passion specifically features that one dildo that's a murder weapon.
Yes.
and I said, you know, you should come to my store. And I just said it real casually, and he said, you have a store? And I was like, I got him! I got him! And so it turned out that the woman, Christine Robeson, who is helping he and Lisa get around town, being their assistant, their PA for the weekend, is a friend of mine. And so they were going to go to the Holy Land Experience, which is an attraction here in Orlando. And then they were going to, I said, well, maybe after Holy Land. And anyway, they scheduled it so they could come to Fairvilla after Holy Land. And so we sanctified them with lube when they came. Just a little, you know, a little Father, Son, and Holy Spirit kind of thing. Anyway,
oh,
they were great. They were wonderful.
Yeah, it seems like you had like a really great time watching the video, interviewing him, and he seemed to really like. You know, he was just really great. I mean, like very, very into it.
Well, and you know, he after a long hot day at a religious themed tourist attraction. To still be able to have a sense of humor, you know what I mean? And to come in and, you know, what we did was we brought out a whole bunch of, you know, knowing his sensibility and all of those kind of great images that he has in his films, we brought out, like, the kind of things we thought he would like the gigantic bullet, like this bullet that's, like, 2.5 feet long, and, like, really, when you hold that thing, like, your hands can go numb when you turn it on, and the penis pinata, which makes me laugh every time I see it, and then the fetish shoes, which, when, at the end of the video, if anybody's going to go and take a look, it's I think it was back in April, it was up, so if you look on the blog under April, but when he licks that fetish shoe, that just like, I thought, like, I can retire now. It's like the greatest thing I've ever seen. So we loved them, and we had a great time. And I do have a good time making the videos. I want to do some more of them.
Yes, yes, I love them. I think they just, you know, they just so capture you. It's like you just have, like, so much energy coming out, and you just, like, you have fun with it. I'm watching the glove one right now.
Well, the glove, I wanted to do, I really love Japanese voiceover. You know what I mean when, like, they have a martial arts movie, especially when it's
yes.
kind of badly dubbed in English.
Yes.
And my original intent was to have something, like, with some really terrible overdubbing by me. Like, I was going to do this terrible overdubbing. I was going to have my friend read in Japanese. But then when she read the script in Japanese, her voice was so captivating. It was the sexiest thing I've ever heard. And I thought, oh, my God, I can't talk over that. Let's just have her do it, and we'll use some subtitles. So, and I think it turned out really nicely. That was just a couple of weeks ago, I think.
So, yeah, it's really cool.
And anytime you have, if you have any suggestions, Steve, by all means, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm very creatively open.
Oh, great. Yeah, I love it. Just, you know, it just, I'm looking at the, well, of course, give him the boots.
Ah, the boots. I love the, well, that, I love the shoe department. You can never go wrong in the shoe department, and I really like the look of fetish wear. I have some people who are sort of into that lifestyle and don't like the fashion, but I'm really into the fashion, and I'm not very familiar with the lifestyle, but boy, I think it looks hot.
Yeah.
And so, we did a little tour of the shoe department. And another thing is, you know, I like to be able to talk about different, whether it's a product or an idea or whatever, I like to present it with a little bit of humor if I can to make
right.
it, make people have, because it's supposed to be fun. You know, it's all supposed to be fun. So, you know, we showed off some of the shoes and had people guess which one I bought personally, and they turned out to be those gigantic boots. And this contest went on for a really long time. I thought for sure, I mean, Orlando's not a big town. I thought everybody knew me better. But it took a really long time. Everybody said, oh, the disco boots, because I like to dance a lot. But those magnificent fetish shoes by Ellie, I'm pretty positive that's the name of the company. But they make some beautiful shoes. So, yeah, I like that one. And,
well, besides liking to dance, you're also a belly dancer, aren't you?
I haven't been dancing as much lately because I've been writing a lot more. Mm-hmm. But I try to stay at least in practice because it's just, I think it's so good for you. It's good to have an exercise, first of all, that you want to do.
Right.
And secondly, that really opens. I had a girlfriend of mine who is, she's my tarot reader, and she said, you need to open up your root chakra. So you need to go back to dancing. So I started dancing again recently. But it does make you, it's such a sensual form of exercise, and it makes you feel so feminine and so beautiful. And you know, I love to teach. I taught beginners belly dance. And I love to teach because I like seeing women come in who feel a little shy. And almost every woman, I would almost say, I don't like to say every, but damn near every woman has some kind of body consciousness, it seems to me.
Yeah.
And I love seeing them forget that. And they look in the mirror while they're dancing, and all of a sudden they really see how beautifully they're moving and how graceful they really are. And I think belly dance brings out that one of my teachers used the word primal. It's like a primal femininity.
Yeah.
And it's so, the music is so transporting. You can really just get lost in it. And when you start to move your hips and you start to move your rib cage, and it's so sensuous, you just don't want to quit once you've started. Very addictive form of fetish. So, I've performed a little bit, taught a little bit, and not as much lately because of doing a lot more writing now, which is kind of my main thing. But
good.
Yeah.
Well, that's
yeah.
good. That's good.
But women.
So then, go ahead.
Oh, well, just women looking for some kind of exercise, especially because it really helps bring out that sensuous spirit, I think.
Yes.
And you're so exhilarated, even if you don't feel like working out when you start, you're so elevated when you're done, and that's the endorphins, but it's also the sensuality of the exercise, I think, and the gracefulness and the real femaleness of it. So I recommend it. You know, anybody who hasn't tried it should try it. Or if you're looking for some different form of exercise that's got that richness to it, it's a great thing.
Well, you got great photos of you doing dancing, and also in costumes.
Are those more, are they on Facebook? I don't remember if I.
I know. I also have. I also have you up on MySpace.
Oh yeah. Now MySpace, I like MySpace. I think that Facebook is right in perfect medium between MySpace and Twitter, because MySpace is almost too much. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it takes forever to upload people's pages because they've put like their music and their videos and all kinds of stuff. So I've been a total slacker on MySpace since I got all involved in Facebook. But yeah, there are some belly dance photos up there.
Yeah, I always, when I go to it, I put, if I'm going to switch, let's over to MySpace, especially if I'm doing the show and I'm looking at it, I always turn my volume down.
Do you have a thing where you forget that all of a sudden you're going to be blasted with somebody's favorite
song?
Yeah,
it's like oh.
I know. And everybody likes something that like starts off really loud. Like nobody likes Bach on MySpace. Like there's no gentle music on,
no.
It seems to me, on anybody's page on MySpace. I had for a little while I had some Arabic music up there that I was working with a drummer named Mark DeMaio, and we just were kind of fooling around. I was playing finger cymbals and he was playing the drums, and he recorded it, and I had that up there for a little while. And it's just like, it's just kind of silly and playing around, but hopefully it didn't knock anybody out of their seat.
No, I thought it was really great. It's like really just really done well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's like I said, I've been neglecting the MySpace. There's so much.
There's too much.
There.
You know, there's just too much to do. I think you have to have one of those things where, well, probably if you have like maybe Digby, where you can, they all come together. Yeah, here we go. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, you're definitely in a costume.
Is it the pink one?
<it's>,
that was my favorite.
It's your. Okay, but if my bar will move down a little bit, let's see my photos.
Yes.
Oh, I like this one with you have some kind of a cake.
A cake.
The fungus of the star show in College Park.
That's a mushroom, and it's.
Oh, it's a mushroom. Oh, okay.
Yeah, my friend Doug Rodehelm is an artist here in Orlando, and he actually has a project. It's an international project called the Spore Project, and he makes these mushrooms out of paper bags, and he plants them in people's yards. And sometimes he does this as like a guerrilla art action. Like he'll plant all these mushrooms in people's yards, and they'll wake up and go outside, and their yard is totally mushroomed, and they look pretty real from the street. They're kind of huge, and. And so, anyway, he had a bunch of people that he knew make these paper bag mushrooms and paint them and design them, kind of to reflect their personality. So mine's all like pink and covered with rhinestones and and faux fur and this stuff. So yeah, it does look like a cake. It's, you know, it just looks like a giant cupcake, I guess. But
yeah, if you don't have it in close up, if you're just seeing it for the first time.
Yeah, yeah, but that was just all I could think of. I'm surprisingly not as visually oriented as it might seem, but I know I can. I'm not very capable of making things like that, and I think part of the reason I have a lot of friends who are artists and who are in visual mediums like filmmaking and things is because I'm not predisposed to that. I'm much more verbal, and so I appreciate people who can do the things that I can't. You know, so yeah, he had a really good show. So, but yeah, the web, there's so much going on, and not just, you know, MySpace and Twitter and Facebook, but now, you know, I was looking at your site, the Mondo Arrow site. There's so much great stuff on there. There's so much great stuff on Carnal Nation, and there's so much really wonderful stuff. And Alternet, like, there's so much amazing stuff to read. Like, I wish I had more time, and it gets kind of frustrating. I always feel like I'm missing something. I have to sort of, you know, keep my homepage on the LOL cats or something, because then it makes me, like, I don't feel like I'm missing things. But once you start, like, looking around, it's like all of these people are doing this really cool, these really great work.
Right, particularly like if you're on Facebook, you get all the updates, and then you see what people are doing, and you have to. And I have I have Google, so I have on my iGoogle page. I can put all these blogs and subscribe to them. So like my page is so filled up right now with things. It's getting longer and longer of the different blogs that I'm subscribing to. Because that, I have to, because that's where I get a lot of the stuff for Soul Dish, the blog that I do, and also stuff I put on the Mondo Harris page at Sexy Spirits. And it's just like you're just finding everything that's there, and it's just, you know, it just feeds my curiosity, which gets to the point here: if sex is natural, why are so many people bad at it?
That was Alternate's headline. That was the column the feature that I wrote on Sherry Winston's workshop. And the gist of that question, if sex is natural, why are so many people so bad at it, is sex is supposed to be it's a primal thing. It's something that it's an animal thing. It's a drive. So why do, you know, then people, or I think that people think that because it's a drive and it's natural, that they should know everything, you know, that they should already know what they're doing. And this kind of goes a little bit back to the stores and asking people questions, but I think people sort of feel this weird pressure, like that they should know more than they do, and they don't give themselves a chance sometimes to find out about themselves and what they like. You know, as I've gotten older, I've come to find a much more comfortable, I think, because I know what I like and what I don't. And, you know, you learn more about your body, and your interests change, your desires change, and you learn more. And this story was encouraging people to go to workshops like Sherry's and to go and you know, to places like Babeland or Fairville University, where you're going to find out a little bit more about what to do in bed, because we don't know naturally.
Right.
We don't know everything naturally. And the more you educate yourself, the better time you're going to have, the more pleasure and enjoyment you're going to have, and then you're going to be a happier person, and then you're going to be nicer when you're driving in your car, and you're not going to run into me on the road. It's all about making people happy. Because then, like, the world's a better place. But, yeah, I talked to a really interesting woman named Marlene Zook, who I think she's at University of San Diego. And I had interviewed her quite some time ago, and it really interested me that she had talked about how baby monkeys, or their primates, will watch other primates have sex, and they learn about sex that way. And when monkeys are raised, it's in that story, that alternate story, if sex is natural, why are people so bad at it, that monkeys are raised in isolation. And this goes back to the Harry Harlow research in the 50s, which I'm going off on a tangent here, but there is a terrific piece on This American Life about Harry Harlow, about the nature of love and what is love. And his experiments with these little monkeys that found out that they really craved affection more than they craved food. Like, they had the wire mother and then the cloth mother, and they would spend all their time with the cloth mother. You know the ones I'm talking about, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
And how when they're raised in isolation, when they encountered monkey of the opposite sex, it wasn't like it was natural for them to want to breed. They didn't know what to do. They were socially inept, and therefore they were kind of sexually inept as well. And so, you know, and I thought that was so interesting. The influence of our culture, the social influences that we have, the way those things influence our sexuality and other elements of us that we think are supposed to be natural is really interesting to me. because it just makes you wonder what is natural really, because how you're always influenced by something. So I think that that stuff's really fascinating.
Right. I think it's you know, the more that you can learn, I mean, why wouldn't you if you had the opportunity? I think that's one of the great things about the internet, is that there's so much out there. Yeah, there's a lot of nonsense, but you know, there's the potential to learn, to become more wise. And I like this other one: is America's love affair with stupidity finally over?
That was actually before I was. Well, yeah, I haven't. I've written kind of specializing in sex and relationships lately, but I've written a lot of other stuff, and that was a little bit more. Again, that was sort of a social kind of cultural idea that maybe we were finally. You know, we go through these phases of being in love with different things in a culture. I think different things come in and out of fashion. And I think in the 80s, being smart was really cool. And then I think it got less and less and less and less cool. And that piece is kind of positing that, well, now we're at a place where being smart kind of has to get cool again, because we've been so damn dumb for so long, and we're starting to get hurt by it, and I think that Sarah Palin had sort of tipped. That was a sort of tipping point. There is like, wow, this is the person who could be the leader of the country, and she's not quite articulate. Not that I'm doing too much better tonight. But
no,
you know,
you're doing
I mean?
Very
like,
well. You're doing very well.
I think people must always feel like they're umming and ahhing a lot.
No.
Or on
no.
radio. But
this is
yeah.
flowing very well.
Good. That's always good. That's good to know. And you know, and this actually ties in with the education thing. It's a different type of education. But you know, going back to the sexual education thing for a second, I think when people do go to a workshop, like I had never been to a workshop like Sherry's before, and I really didn't know what to expect. And I think once you go, and I have a friend who does in-home toy parties too, who, you know, and she'll do them with couples, and sometimes the men will be a little bit hesitant. Sometimes some of the women will be too. But I think once you go to one of those things, if you kind of like, if you're feeling shy and you get over it and you go ahead and you go, the experience is, I think, probably going to be such a beneficial one that you'll go more. So it's like once you break down that barrier once, there's momentum to it, and you find it easier to go to more and more of these things and then learn more and more, whether it's about technique or it's about, you know, exercises that you can do, or just, you know, like I'm sure that they do lots of tantra workshops. I've never been to one, but you were talking about your friends. Did they do workshops?
Oh yes, well, they do classes, and I book the workshops for Sexy Spirits, so I'm always looking for new people who want to present and who want to do interviews and also to do workshops. And we have our own workshops with Anton, where he teaches the expanded orgasm for women.
Wow.
And that's an amazing thing to watch, and also it's a lot of transformation for a man to undergo. It's a whole philosophical thing of getting away from the idea, well, when's it going to be my time? When's it going to be my turn? Your turn, your time is right here, right now. You know, and then it's a whole different concept. But it's amazing transformation when you see the people who go through the program that we have and how they turn out.
It is really interesting to see, you know, how you start out, or to watch other people. It's a little bit like I was talking about with the dance class. You know, you start out one way, and you make this. It's an incredible change by the time you get to the end. You know, hopefully it should be. So, yeah, I think that part of it's really interesting. But I think it's for many people, it's about getting over that little barrier of just getting through the door. You know,
yes,
that's the biggest step. So. And once they get there, I think that, you know, that it's always a good thing. So.
So what do you think about polyamory?
I think that if I've not experienced it. I've never been in a polyamorous relationship. I think if it works, it's certainly. I think if you're the kind of person who, I think from what I've talked about with other people who are polyamorous, I've done stories on polyamory for Alternate and also for Salon. And if you have a lot of constant dialogue or trialogue.
Not just dialogue, trialogue, yeah.
Or a quadrilogue or however many you got in the house or wherever you are. I think if you have a constant, communication, then that's probably, then it can certainly work. If it works for you, it works for you. I was actually looking on your blog. You had the story about Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
Who has the, she's married, right? Is she married? And then she has.
She's married, and she has a child, and then she has the boyfriend, the younger man who's an artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if it's working for everybody involved, mm-hmm. and if they're maintaining a happy, healthy relationship and not kind of secretly harboring jealousies or things like that, because I would imagine that you might get a little jealous, but that could be just me putting my feelings, projecting what my feelings might be. What do you think?
Well, I've been around it for the last several years. I haven't actually experienced it, but as someone who's been in, I go to the Poly Pride Day every year in Central Park. Mm-hmm. So I'm observing it, and I'm seeing it's just interesting to watch. The fact that, first of all, the thing that strikes me is that the whole thing is really run by women. It's mm-hmm. not a guy, it's not, it might start out as a guy's fantasy, but in reality, the engine is really driven by women.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've seen, when I go there, I see a lot of women there with their boyfriends, but I see a lot of bi women there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's always interesting to me about it. And but it's just it's this amazing day in Central Park where you can walk in and you see it. This whole like other reality comes to life that day. And also I know people who've talked about it, we've had people give lectures and workshops on it, and Deborah Annapol has been to Sexy Spirit several times, and she always she's always a big draw. She always fills up the house. So there's something out there that I think that the current situation, the way people exist in monogamy, it's just not working. It's breaking down. And, I think that this is a pretty rational alternative to it. You have to get past the jealousy issues. You have to get past your possessiveness and your obsessiveness. But, that's all part of growth, and that's part of transforming yourself. And, mm-hmm. The truth is all these things, possessiveness, obsessiveness, jealousy, they're not positive things, so why would you want to hold on to them? They're not real, they're not natural. They're thought forms and programs and conditioning, and it's not of you, it's of your parents and your grandparents and your great 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 grandparents, so why wouldn't you want to get rid of it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I look at it. It's like, all these things, I don't look upon them as truth. I look upon them as, as programming things to be transformed.
So essentially, it's very similar to some of the things that we were talking about before. It's that transformative experience.
Yes.
Where, if you're willing to go in the door, then you just have to get through the door, and then maybe you'll come out changed on the other side. I think it certainly beats cheating and being dishonest with whoever you are with. And that's the communication thing. If you were able to talk to your partner, and then I think a lot of the things that you're talking about there too are ego, the jealousies and the things mm-hmm. like that. If you can understand that it's not necessarily a rejection of you. You know what I mean? Because they wouldn't be rejecting you. They would be just bringing somebody else into the relationship.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that if people can kind of get hold of it that way, then they have successful relationships. You know, the people that I spoke to here in Florida at the polyamory event that I went to here, and I interviewed Robin from Different Loving. Loving More. I'm sorry. Loving More. And I can't remember her last name off the top of my head. But they all, you know, had a lot of the people that I talked to, most of the people that I talked to, talked about communication and working on jealousy issues. But they were having successful relationships, successful multi-partner relationships. So I think that if you, and I think also the model of monogamy that you're talking about is, kind of, I think, I don't know why everybody falls back to the 50s always as this
yes.
kind of idyllic place, but, you know,
it wasn't.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, I mean, it has to be mythology, right? And it's unhealthy because I think we think about that model, like this one person is supposed to be your best friend and your financial,
yeah.
your business partner and your lover, and it's too much for one person. It's too much to ask, and it's too much to be, and you need, just
yeah.
like you need other friends, you know, and you need other people in your life. And so some people then, you know, need other lovers in their life, and I think if it works for them, then by all means, I keep defaulting to it if it makes if it's making everybody happy, you know.
I mean, has anybody seen, did anybody watch the film Revolutionary Road lately? I mean, you know, that was set in the 50s.
I didn't see Revolutionary Road. Is it what's the...
That's with Kate Winslet and Leo.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was very good. I thought it was very well done.
Uh-huh.
It kind of really showed that whole suburban... trap that life was like. See, that's it's actually a very famous novel
mm-hmm.
that came out at that time period, and it was also written in a book called The Hearts of Men, which was a really really great book that, you know, talked about the 50s and from a man's point of view anyway, of alienation and breaking away and trying to find out, like, what is the answer. So I think, you know, when people, you know, go to try and romanticize the 50s, you know, they should look at some of those books and say, well, you know, not quite. Not quite.
Well, and I think the roles that it seems like just such a very one-dimensional role. I just did another story for Alternate about vibrators and this social... you know, I think it was this recent University of Indiana study where 53% of women and 45% of men have used vibrators, which is like a skyrocketing jump from what it was a few years ago, at least, or it might have been only, you know, the people were not admitting it to it, you know, even in the early 90s. But our sexual openness has changed so much. And when I was, you know, looking at sort of like the history of vibrators and stuff, and I was reading a little bit about the 50s, and it seemed almost like it was a throwback to Victorian era when women were supposed to be these paragons of virtue. Only,
yeah.
you know, in the 50s, then you add domesticity to that as well. And you're supposed to be, it's entirely too antiseptic of an idea of a way to be. And I think that a lot of people sort of, in a weird way, that has... It's like a film of that has clung on to the whole idea of monogamous relationships and things
yeah.
like that. And I think certainly we've come very, very far, but there's that little bit of debris that kind of still hangs in there. And I think that people still have a little bit of that idea of that's how it's supposed to be. And it just doesn't work, you know?
No.
Maybe for like one in a million. But is it when people model themselves on that one rather than realizing that that's not how it is for most people, I kind of equate those things to thinking that everybody who plays the violin is going to be a virtuoso. It's like it's not going to be everybody's going to have a different experience, you know. and some people aren't even going to like the violin. And, you know, so they're going to want to play several different instruments. And so, you know, everybody's experience is going to be different. And I think there's something in the human psyche that sort of wants everybody to be all the very similar and easily categorizable and easily understood. And it's not. It's kind of better that it's not. It's not as easy, but it's better.
No, because then if, you know, I mean, everything, there would be no growth. There would be no transformation. It would just be the same old nonsense over and over again. And, you know, that's part of growing up and becoming intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to say consistently that the nicest and the most intelligent people I have met in the last several years have been people who have been into swinging, people who are polyamory, and people who were into BDSM, and then, you know, someone like Nina Hartley,
mm-hmm.
like everything, and to top it off, a porn star and a legendary director as well. So, I mean, mm-hmm. it just, the whole thing just tends to expand you everywhere.
Well, I think it's that willingness to give it a try. You know, like people
right.
who are open to these kinds of, I don't know, is alternate sexuality, is that like is that on PC? I don't know. But not the who are into, you know, or who will try different types of sexuality and will and expand their horizons a little bit. There's an exhilaration to making the attempt, you know. Because maybe it's also then okay if you don't like it.
Right.
But at least you tried, at least you gave it a shot. And I think that probably the reason those people are, that you're finding like those nicer experiences, is they're probably just more open-minded people.
Yes,
so if
absolutely.
They're open-minded for themselves, then they're going to be more open-minded towards you, whatever your decision and lifestyle is going to be. You know, then hopefully they'll be open-minded towards that as well. So that makes some sense to me. I've never heard of that. This polyamory. No, you said it's a polyamory weekend.
Oh, Poly Pride. Actually,
Poly Pride.
It does.
When
it's Poly Pride Day in Central Park. It's in, I think, like one of the first 2 weeks of October, and generally also there's a whole weekend of events. And actually, I think it probably starts on Friday, and I think one of them is a super poly cuddle party that they have.
So can you describe that a little further?
Which one, the super?
The super poly cuddle party.
The super poly cuddle party. I have not been to that one. I've been to the regular cuddle parties because I'm a friend of Reed's, and Reed has been a guest on the show here, and he was just here recently at Sexy Spirits, and he did a cuddle party in the afternoon, and in the evening he did a workshop on negotiating successful threesomes.
Oh, okay. So when you say like negotiating, that's the whole communication thing. Like you kind of
exactly.
lay out the rules, and you kind of talk about how this is going to be before you start it, so that, you know, later on you can go back and say, hey, we already talked about this.
Right.
Don't let things just pop up naturally without kind of hammering out an agreement first. Well, what's a cuddle party like?
A cuddle party? Have you ever been to one?
No.
Do you know anything about it?
No.
Okay, well, basically a cuddle party, it does involve communication. The first part of it is something of like a lecture, and
mm-hmm.
they discuss it and discuss what the rules are and the boundaries. And then after that, you go into free-form cuddling. And one of the great things about it is exercises in the lecture part, the introduction part, you ask someone something like, may I touch you? And they always say no. And you say, thank you. And you just have that experience of what it's like to be turned down and realize you're not going to die. You know, that it's okay. and you'll survive it. And then, you know, you proceed to go on. And then sometimes there's like big group cuddles, and sometimes you might have one or two people cuddling, and you might have two or three or four sometimes like that. And so it all depends on the people involved.
And what kind of a space is this in? Is this at a club or...
No, these are generally in people's apartments. When we have it at Sexy Spirits, we have it in the lecture room.
Okay.
So we can very easily turn that into like we get all these pillows and we put them on the floor and it turns into this one huge like pillow room. We make it very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I went to one. It wasn't Reed who was running it. It's one of my friends was doing. He said, "Oh, I'm having this cuddle party." I said, "Uh huh." "It's going to be at Anton's." I said, "Okay. Can you come?" I said, "I'll pay you $20." I said, "Okay, I'll be there." So the great thing about cuddle party for me is I get to go for free and I always make money.
Oh man, that rocks!
So that's, you know. So I love cuddle parties. You know, it's like, hey, let's have another one. You know.
Every time you need a little, it's 20, right?
Yeah, it's that 20 was good, and you know, and the more people we have, the more money I make.
Wow, you can't beat that. You're a professional cuddler.
Yeah, and also I liked it too because I'm a person who enjoys hugging and holding. I'm told that I'm, you know, a really good hugger. I think it's just something really that's very enjoyable. And, you know, it allows you to get through and break down through so many defense screens and just enjoying people's energy.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, it's certainly a great thing to be called a great hugger because it's such a comforting thing. It's such a little comforting thing. And, you know, people really need that sense of touch. And I'm pretty tactile that way too, you know. And it's funny when you hug somebody, because I'm just sort of a natural hugger.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hug somebody who's not, it's really funny to me. Like,
because
they're sort of like, they don't know what to do. And it's like, you know, and you immediately sort of back off because you can feel like, oh, I kind of like, I shouldn't have just automatically hugged this person when I went to say goodbye. Like, you know, you go to people's houses, I like automatically hug people goodbye, like that kind of thing. And then when they're not used to it, it's like, oh, sorry. I'm just so automatically that way. And I think, you know, I guess most of my friends are too. So yeah, it's when I remember certain people who are like, wow, that's definitely not a touchy person, you know. And I think the cuddle party sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's a really nice thing.
You have to prove your cuddling expertise first before you start getting paid to go.
Yeah, it's you're in the communication skills, and it's pretty cool. I liked it. It's always been I've always had interesting experiences there.
I think it's really interesting that they have you go through the experience of being turned down first.
Yes.
Because I think that should happen with everything. I think that you should have the experience of having somebody turn you down first so you can realize that you're not going to die. I really like that.
Right.
There are so many things that we have to sort of ask for or, you know, kind of, especially with everybody trying to promote things and do things and just like to realize, like, it's not going to be the end of the world if it doesn't happen. You know? I think that's a great idea. So...
Well, I'm just looking at the archive here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much. So I didn't have to prepare anything really. You know, I'll just go down the archive and see. Okay, let me ask her on this. You know, well, she already wrote about it, so.
Well, the one thing I brought up the nudist thing before was that was just my most recent one, and that was my favorite story that I've done in a long time. I don't think that we talked too much about
it. Right, let's talk about that.
Yeah, that was the Guinness Book of World Records recently did their first recording of the world's largest skinny dip.
Yeah.
So it was there was no having to break the record. Nobody had to break the record because there was no record before. But what it was is all of these nudist resorts all over North America, you would sign up and go to a sanctioned nudist resort on the day of the event, which is July 11th, and it was 3 o'clock Eastern time. And everybody who was in the water at the time got counted. And I had never done anything like that before. And I had kind of crazily agreed to go ahead and do it. I really love first-person stories. I like reading them. I like writing them. And when Alternet asked me to do a first-person story, I had brought up the idea of the skinny dip, but I had brought it up as a preliminary thing, like, well, people might want to go do this. Let me write about this because people will go. And they said, you know, why don't you do a first person? And I thought, like, oh, okay. And then I thought, like, oh, what did I do? Like, oh, now I have to do this. And I had never done anything like that before. So I practiced. I went to Cypress Cove Resort here in Kissimmee, Florida, which is right near Walt Disney World, actually, pretty close. And so I went to Cypress Cove. So that, because I didn't, on the day of the big event, I didn't want my mind to be on, oh, my God, I'm naked in front of, you know, 600 people and have it be the first time I ever did anything like that. I didn't want to be thinking about that. I wanted to be able to write the story. So I thought, I have to kind of get used to this before I go ahead and do the event. And so I never thought, I know this is like the beginning of every Penthouse Forum letter, I never thought it would happen to me. You know, I never thought. I never thought I would be the kind of person who wanted to like frequent a nudist resort. But once I got used to it, it's again that going through the door. Once I went out there, and it took me about an hour to get all my clothes off, like one at a time, like taking the bathing suit top off, and then like you know a little bit at a time. But once I got out there in the sun and the pool and everything, I just did not want to leave. And so it's been about, I think the first time I went out there is almost 2 months ago now. And to give you an idea, everybody keeps saying, God, you're so tan. Just like every chance I get, run out to the pool. And it's great. It's such a simple thing, but it's so exhilarating and so relaxing at the same time. And I think I'm really lucky because, you know, Cypress Cove is beautiful and this is a perfect place to be if you decide that nudism is something you want to do, Florida, because you can do it for such a long time during the year, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And so so yeah, I was so excited because this is one of those stories that one of those kind of great rare stories where everything about it was the research was fun. I mean, to get to call swimming naked research is like, that's the greatest job you could have. And writing the story was really fun. I was really proud of the way it turned out. And I had so much fun. The event was great. We had 403 people here in
wow.
Kissimmee. And then I don't know whether they've come out. I should actually look up online whether they've come up with the final count, because it was going to take a little while because they had to count all the people on the list and the pictures and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Is that something that you've done before? You've done everything, right?
Well, I wouldn't say I've done everything. I've done a lot of researching, but certainly if the opportunity presented itself, I definitely would take a shot at it. Yeah.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of getting used to, you know.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, though, that if you go into an area where everybody, there's so many interesting things about it. You go into an area where everybody's nude, and you feel conspicuous if you're dressed.
Right.
You know, and so it's this very much this reversal. And then you also realize, like, everybody's bodies are so different, and, you know, It's just become so, you kind of lose an idea of good or bad and just go right to interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
nothing's better or worse. It's just like, wow, this, like, I had no idea how many variations of size and color there were of absolutely everything, because we're so used to seeing sort of regulation bodies, and whether it's pornography or movie stars, you know, mainstream film or adult film.
Right.
And you have no idea what's out there. And it's great to find out. So
I've had that kind of experience going to swing parties.
Uh-huh.
Seeing the different people and everything, because I'm always working. That's the whole thing. I'm working at these events, but I have seen that the differences.
Yeah.
And how it all works out, and how these people are comfortable with it.
Yeah, and you kind of, once you get over that whole thing, you know, you don't really realize that the people that you're talking to are naked. You sort
right.
of like are talking to them. There was one lady who said to me, I talked to this group of women at the Skinny Dip, and I'm just looking online right now, and it doesn't look, I'm looking at news results for Guinness Record Skinny Dip, and it doesn't look like the final results have come in. But anyway, these ladies were talking to me, and one of them said the reason that she likes it is because you could be sitting next to a millionaire and you'd never know it, because you can't tell anything about anyone by their clothes.
Right.
So there is this absence of a particular kind of, status symbol. And then also, those other ladies said, you know, nobody really judges you on your appearance, but they judge you if you say something stupid. And so I thought, like, that's really way better.
Yeah.
It kind of gets to the substance of a person right away.
There you go with intelligence.
So,
you have a really great line here, though.
What's that?
Florida is hotter than Satan's jockstrap in the summer.
Well, yes, it is, and we have oh my God, it's so moist, like the air is so moist, and if it doesn't rain, usually it rains in the afternoon. Or when I was growing up here, it would rain every afternoon, starting at 3 o'clock. You could almost set your watch by it.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, the weather patterns have changed a little bit, and oh my God, it's brutal out there. Which makes it even nicer when you jump into the pool. And makes you want even less to put your clothes on when you have to leave.
Yes.
But they did the Skinny Dip in the lake, because the pools weren't going to be, there are two really terrific pools at Cypress Cove, but I think they decided they probably wouldn't be big enough to accommodate all of the people who wanted to participate. And so they went in the lake, and I haven't swam in a lake here in a long time. It was really like walking into a cup of coffee. It's very hot. You know, that it's not like the Atlantic Ocean or anything. It's like they're kind of like, when it's so hot and the water just gets so hot, and it's not like jumping into a nice icy cold pool. But we all had a great time, and it's such a beautiful place, and so, yeah, it was definitely a fun story to write. And to be able to write about Florida a little bit, too, was kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. It just, it's just absolutely fantastic talking to you. And, I really encourage people to, and give them the name again of the blog.
My blog is... It's www.lizlangley.com, and it's LIZLANGLEY.
Mm-hmm.
And, they can just go there, and that'll take them right, they'll redirect them right to Blogspot,
which
is where my blog is. Yeah. It's LizLangley.com is way easier to remember. and that piece was on Alternet, and if they want to check out Alternet, it was just ran very recently. And, there is another line somebody brought up that I like, and I like the idea, and maybe that's the idea that I can leave with, is I was scared, I was kind of a little bit scared to do the whole newsroom thing. I was nervous. But I had written in the piece that doing what you fear is a really great antidepressant.
Yeah.
And I think that that's true, because if you conquer it, you just feel so much better. It's so relaxing. You know, it just makes you feel better. So... So fantastic. That was my favorite part of it.
That's fantastic. I want to thank you so much for being here tonight. I certainly would love to have you come on again. And, if you get up to New York, definitely would love to have you stop by Sexy Spirits.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun talking to you, Steve. I really appreciate it. I love your blog. And thank you so much for having me on. I'd love to come back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And,
okay.
And thank you all for listening in here tonight. And we will return next week with some more stimulating conversation. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and you have been listening to Mondo Eros Live on bpsradio.com. Thank you, and good evening.